Okay, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another round of Da'as Atzmecha, to know how to learn who you are. And I think there was a couple questions. I had one email from somebody. Does anybody have any questions from last week before we start, or you want me to start first and then you want to ask as we begin? Okay. Want me to start, eh? Okay. First of all, yes, ma'am.
So last week we were speaking about all the different ways that we should try and connect ourselves more to the spiritual, ourselves as, you know, the spiritual side, but we never actually discussed how.
We didn't discuss how. Right. Of course we did not discuss how. And we're not going to discuss that today either. That's going to be next week. We're still on chapter 2, and that's more of the introduction and trying to convince us of the importance of what we're doing over here and to get buy-in. Once you have buy-in, then we're going to start going through the steps that are necessary. Okay, so that's, we didn't discuss that. That's right. It takes a while till we get into here. For those of you who are here for the first time, I would recommend, if you want to continue with this, to look up the first two classes. They're online on our website. You click on online learning and you'll see there's a class called Da'es Atzmecha, the one you can't understand. That's the one. It's Da'es Atzmecha. So that will give you the background. Basically, it's a question of, well, I'll start with this, a story. Somebody I was learning with somebody this week, and somebody from our community who doesn't come to shul on Shabbos, he comes for high holidays, he's a member of the shul, and he likes me, and I learn with him once every 2 weeks. And so this week he comes to me and says, "Well, Rabbi, I want to ask you something." See, he goes to the local Y, the Jewish Y, and he's in the changing room, and he sees a couple of young fellows wearing a kippah and tzitzis, and he says, and they're changing, and they're talking, and they're using the F word. So, Rabbi, could you explain to me why these people, these Orthodox people, are using the F word? So to make things worse, as we were talking a little bit more, he said, yeah, and there's a person who's there as well. He says he's a rabbi. He looks like a rabbi. And in the course of a conversation he had with somebody, he was discussing the faults of a person who had gone to the club who was now deceased. He was discussing the faults of that person. So he turns to me as the Orthodox rabbi and his friend and says, how do you explain that? So I, you know, now that's really very sad. It puts people like me in a very difficult situation. So basically the answer to that question, which I couldn't, I answered him and I'll tell you what I said, but the real answer to the question is this book, this issue. This is the real answer to the question. As that many people, how do you define an Orthodox Jew? Well, I hate definitions, and I don't know. Orthodox is from the Latin, that means what? I think straight, right? Orthodox, right? What is it? Who's good in Latin? Come on, guys, help me out, right? Something like straight, straight path, right? Right, you're a lawyer. You got to know this stuff, right? You got no language. You got no language that people don't understand, right? But something like straight. So the truth is, the issue we talked about last week, is who, what part of ourselves do we identify with? Do I identify with as now? There was one comment that somebody made, like, where is this person popping off with all these ideas? So I just, for those who are a little bit curious about the ideas of body and soul, if they exist or not, so I would just want to refer people to the great work of Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, who's a premier Kabbalist and scholar that is well recognized in all spheres of Judaism. And in the first section of the book, in the third chapter, from the second paragraph on, he goes into a great discussion of body and soul. So this is like primary Jewish understanding that we have a body and a soul. And I'll just read a few lines because maybe there was an assumption I made the last couple weeks and maybe I shouldn't have made that assumption. So I'll just read a little bit, and you'll hear what has to be said. He says, in order that God's goal be best achieved, the highest wisdom decreed that man should consist of two opposites. Because the whole point of creation in Judaism is man has free will choice to create the reality that he wishes to have in order to decide if he wants to get close to God or not. That's what the whole religion is based on. So the human being is consisting of two opposites. These are his pure spiritual soul and his unenlightened physical body. Each one is drawn toward its nature, so that the body inclines toward the material while the soul leads toward the spiritual. The two are then in a constant state of battle. If the soul prevails, it not only elevates itself, but elevates the body as well, and the individual thereby attains his destined perfection. If he allows the physical to prevail on the other hand, and besides lowering his body, he also debases his soul. Such an individual will be unfit for perfection, will be kept far from it. Even so, he retains the ability to subjugate the physical to his soul and intellect and thereby achieve perfection. And, you know, that's the whole discussion that's involved here. There is a body, there is a soul. The body is looking more towards the spiritual, the intellect, the rational part of the person that is able then to engage the emotional part of the person and the actual physical activities that the human being does. While the body is body. It's body. It's flesh, the blood, it's the, what's the word I'm looking for? The chemicals that are running through your body, the physical animal life force, the biochemistry is all part of the body. The brain itself, the raw piece of the brain is part of body, okay? And the soul is that part that no doctor in any medical field has found yet. It's that life-giving force that is more of a beyond physical realm that gives life and existence to the body. And Luzzatto mentions it. He says, we are normally aware of the soul's existence only because it provides us with life and the ability to think. That comes from the soul. But then he says there's much more important things that the soul does, which we're not going to get into now. So this is like a critical aspect. We have a body and we have a soul, and those are the facts. Those are the facts. So then the question therefore becomes, so who am I? And we talked about this a little bit last week. Who am I? Am I a body and a soul? And we said the answer is, you are neither. The question is, you will choose which one you identify with. You've got them both. Which one do you identify with? That is who you will become. And you have a free will choice to identify with either one. Now, what all the teachings of the Torah say is that it's more advantageous, it's more pleasurable, more meaningful, more real, to identify with the soul, which is more connected to God and the true reality, while the body is just a veneer, a tool, a garment, which is supposed to be used by the body and not ruling the body. And a person has a choice. Does one want to identify with a body and therefore become nothing more than a sophisticated rational animal? Or does a person want to be a spiritual being that is much more connected to higher forms of reality? That is a choice that everybody makes in their life. And if you say that I am a Jew and you want to relate to parts of Judaism, so the question is, what part of the Judaism do you want to relate to? Judaism is made up of many levels. There's the spiritual part of Judaism. That will obviously impact and affect how we physically live our lives. And therefore, there are Jews who only focus on the physical part of the religion, and they miss out on the spiritual part of the religion. So you will have a person who will put on tzitzit, because that's what you do as a Jew. And if I was raised as an Orthodox Jew, I put them on. But if that's the beginning and the end of it, you are missing the most important part of why we put the tzitzis on. You're identifying with a physical part. Well, why do I put it on? Because, you know, Jews put it on. You know, why do you have an earring in your ear? Or an earring in your belly button? Well, you know, the Jews have this four-cornered garment with these tassels hanging from your shirt. Why do it? Well, God said so. So why are you doing it? Because God said so. But why are you doing it? Because God said so. Well, so if that's just because God said so, then why can't I say the F word? If you're focusing just on the body part of the religion, you're focusing on the shell of the religion without what's in the religion, and that is a trap that Orthodox Jews can fall in. While we'll call, and I don't even like to use the term, we'll call a secular Jew, whatever that's supposed to mean, but I don't have a better term, a not Orthodox Jew, right, who doesn't do the doings of Judaism, but says, oh, but I really feel strongly Jewish connected, and I'm Jewish in my own way, I would ask them, what does that mean? And what religion are you inventing? Right? And I would say that both approaches are very wrong. I would say the secular Jew who says Judaism is what I feel it is a phony person. And the person who is putting on the tzitzit and saying the F word is also a phony person. Or just not connected to really what's going on over here. So I said to the guy, well, if you want to be a real bit of a pest a little bit, and it might not even be such a bad thing to do. If you see these guys again at the club, this is what you might want to say. You might want to play like the ignorant guy and say, you know, because this guy doesn't work, but like he's quote-unquote secular. So he should say, can you tell me what these tassels are and why you wear them? So then they'll say, well, you know, it's a mitzvah in the Torah to do that. So like, why do you do it? Well, why do it? Because it says so in the Torah. So then he should say, but why does God want you to wear it? So if they're a little bit, if they remember anything from their fourth grade, because these kids are with kippahs, they probably went to Jewish day school, right? Remember anything from fourth or fifth grade, which I don't know how much you remember. So at least you say, well, you know, it reminds us that we have to do all 613 mitzvos. Because there's a whole numerical value of what it is. The word tzitzit has a numerical value of 600, and you have 8 strings and 5 double knots, and that's 613. It reminds you of the 613 mitzvahs. So then he could say, oh, you mean it's something like to make sure you do everything it says in the Torah? He says, yeah, that's why we wear it. And you say, so does it say in the Torah that you're allowed to say the F word? And then let them draw their own conclusions. But be as an ignorant person. So that really is the answer. So, you know, when you hear why do Orthodox Jews cheat in business and do all these things, is because they're not really identifying with the wholesomeness of what the religion is all about. In Judaism, it's critical to maximize what it's all about is to identify with the soul. If you identify with the soul, then you're trying to connect to that much deeper reality of what the religion is. You're not trying to connect to the physical strings. It's what's behind the strings. What's the life force behind that that's making it so? That really is what connecting you to God. Right? That I think, is an important point. I don't know if that clarifies things, but yes? Oh, okay. Thank you. A right believer?
True
doctrine.
In a deeper sense, it also means
right worship. Okay, so Orthodox is the true doctrine. It's following the doctrine that was from Sinai 3,300 years ago. It's the true doctrine. What did you say before? True doctrine?
True doctrine.
Okay, so that's fine. All right, so that's good. So we can go a little bit ahead now. Okay, I thought that was important just to clarify that. Okay, so you have in your book these handouts. I'm sorry, we still don't have a book. I don't think we're going to have one for a while. You have page 6 over here. In the Hebrew, we kind of came to an agreement that I'll get to read some Hebrew and explain it. In the Hebrew, it is on page. Give me one second. The bottom of page, Ayin Zion. Ayin Zion. Okay, so again, last week we talked about what do you identify with more, and we mentioned last week, the last big subject was that the greatest crisis in your life will come when? When you die. Why? Because when you die, if most people identify with their body, if you identify with this body as being the entire reality that you have, what happens on the day of death? The day of death is that body that you thought was everything is going right into the ground and is finished. And all of a sudden this soul takes off. And well, that soul was part of you, but you're totally not identifying with that soul. And that's a tremendous identity crisis you go through. It is the greatest pain that an individual can go through in their entire existence. Is everything that you thought you identified with isn't. And there's this something else that you don't know anything about that you're supposed to be identified with. That is a crisis that will happen no matter what you believe in, no matter what you do, that's going to happen. The only choice you have is you can go through this identity crisis now and slowly, slowly, slowly try to identify with the soul while you're alive. And then if you identify with the soul and you're alive, then when a person dies, what did we discuss, describe that is? You're just discarding an old coat, an old 85-year-old wrinkled coat for another one, a different one in the next world. So I think that's real important. And one other thing that's going to really feed into this, and probably I'll read the next section and then I'll give you a little more explanation here. So a lot of you are thinking, okay, now to really to proceed, you got to like accept these ideas. Like these are primary Jewish ideas. If you really say, you know, I don't believe that there's a soul, then, you know, I'd have to give you some reading to do, because this class is making some assumptions that you believe that there's a soul, you believe that there is some eternal existence, you know, and if you believe in that, then it's what to talk about. If you don't believe in it, then it's very hard. But now the next question is, so you say, okay, I hear what you're saying, Rabbi, so then you might decide, you know, I'll wait to get the pain when I die, because life is pretty good now. So we know there's always a principle, people always delay things for a later date, even though you know it's important to pay your taxes by a certain date, but you might just say, you know, it's too painful, I'll wait till the last possible minute to do it. So for me to identify with my soul seems to, although you really have no basis of saying this, seems to be a very painful thing, seems to be very strange and different, it's change, and we like to avoid change, so I'll wait the last possible minute till I die, and then I'll deal with it when I die. So the next section here is going to say it's not a good idea. And that's what the next session is called. Wicked are considered dead even in their lifetime. So he says, Yisrael Kain, more than this. If you wait till that change that happens at the end of you, at the day of death, you're already dead. What are you waiting for to die when you're 85? You're dead today at 41. Madua, why? The force that really gives life to the person. This is the spiritual force that is in the person. It really is the essence of the life of you, is the soul. That is the essence of your life. That is the life that you really have. The body, again, is just a garment. So there is life pulsating through your body that you are not identifying with. And that is what hakoch ronisha b'socho nishmasa. That's in your soul. So kasher ha'adam mazhe es atzmo keguf. If you identify yourself as a body, harei sheinenu mizoha ima neshama. So you're not identifying with the soul, which is the source of life. And if you're not identifying with the source of life, im kena filu achshav ukomemais. So now it's like he's a dead person. It's like you're dead now. There is a life force around you, but you have nothing to do with it. What do you have to do with? Just the flesh and blood and all that stuff. That's only moving because something else is moving it. Right? It's the soul that's moving the body. But the body itself is really not a living, vibrant being in and of itself. It's not inherently alive. It's a hunk of mass. It has life because the soul is pumping life into it. But it's not a source of life itself. So that's something that really is heading for a crash course. And as I said, Shabbos afternoon, we gave this example in the Talmud. Ben, you're going to like this legal implication here. Talmud, I'll give you a little legal thing for 2-3 minutes. But how do you view your life is a very important thing. You know, if you take a glass and you're on the 30th floor of a building, Okay, and you drop the glass. It's heading down. It's heading down. And then a sharpshooter, another guy, sharpshooter, he shoots the gun, the glass while it's in midstream going down. And the glass belonged to a third person. Who's obligated to pay for that glass? Another case. There's a glass sitting on the floor. Somebody drops a boulder from the 30th floor heading right for the glass. And before the boulder hits the glass, somebody shoots the glass. Who's obligated to pay in that case? So we'll spare all the legal positioning and arguing we can do. I'll give you the answer in the Talmud. The case where the guy threw the glass, that guy's obligated right then and there. Because when you threw the glass, you set it on a course for destruction. If nothing else happens, that thing is destroyed. And if you drop something, the force of gravity is pull it down. That act of dropping it down has had it be destroyed. The fact that a guy sharpshooted it down has nothing to do with anything because you've already set it on a course for destruction. On the other hand, in the second case, where the guy has his glass there and a guy shoots a boulder down, not necessarily that boulder is going to hit that glass. That glass is alive and vibrant. And, you know, something can happen. Something can happen. But when you shot it, it's finished. So really, therefore, the one who shot it is the one who's obliged. So the truth of the matter is, this is the two paradigms of life. Do you view your life as a glass that's been dropped from the 30th floor and you're slowly heading for destruction? Or do you view your life as my glass is here and can go on forever? There might be an outside force that could take it out. But it's sitting here and it's vibrant and it's alive. This is the difference in identifying with the body and the soul. Remember, the body comes from physical matter. That physical matter was created on the first day of creation when God said, let there be matter. Matter is a physical product, physical, finite product that has a beginning and has an end, and that ceases to exist. And that the human body came from that. Just like everything in this world is set, and what's that law called? The law of entropy? Is that the right law? Where everything goes from a state of where it is to a state where it's irreparable or inoperable or whatever. It's the law of entropy, which is really all the laws of physics are based on spiritual laws. God created it, so if it's finite and physical, it has to be finished. So the human body, the body is part of the physical world that was created. When we look at the discussion of the soul wasn't created in the finite creation process. It is that part of God, as it were, that infinite reality that goes beyond the creation model and doesn't ever end. So you have a part of you that is infinite, that will not end. That's a living, vibrant part that is always going on. If a part of you that's finite is going towards a crash course. If you're identifying with the body, you're identifying with a crash course. Your life is heading to a terminal state of death. That body is slowly degenerating until you'll get to the, and then you're finished. It's a crash course to finality. The soul never dies. Never dies. And anything, it gets stronger and stronger and stronger. So the question is, which one are you relating to? Something that is going from a state of existence to a state of non-existence, or something that's in a state of existence to a greater state of existence? That's the question that a person has to ask and what they want to choose in life. Yeah, was there a hand up there? Yeah?
So, raises two sort of metaphysical questions. Why is then Hashem taking a finite being, merging it with an infinite being? It seems like an act of cruelty to contain this infinite in this sort of tiny space called the good.
What your question is, for the sake of the audience that's listening, why would God be so quote-unquote cruel to put a infinite soul into a finite body? Second half of the question, why is that cruel?
Yeah,
why?
Because it's containing it.
It's containing it.
Yeah.
So what's wrong with containing it?
Because it was pre-existing in an uncontained form.
Right. So what God wants to do with this is to create this entity now that can make the soul be even greater. The soul now, if can go through challenges in life that can make it greater than it was before it was created, than from the time it was created. To give the human being that identifies with that entity the pleasure of creating itself. There's no greater pleasure than self-actualization, which God... Now, why God did that, we don't know. We can't go to what he did, what his reasons were before he created the world. But once he did, that's what he's doing it for. The soul exists. The soul's wonderful, but it hasn't earned its keep. God brings it down to its world to earn its keep. And for you to have the most amazing feeling in the world. What's that, Jeanette? Remember?
Close to God.
No, better than that. From an earlier class. You know it, but I'm just wanting you to remember what, the thing I'm thinking of. Remember the wide world of sports? 30 years ago? With Chris Schenkel? I don't know how I can remember such useless information. And the shorter guy, I can't remember the shorter guy. And they'd start off with these amazing pictures with the guy skiing on the water, you know, and it was called the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. Right? The thrill of victory is the greatest pleasure you can have in this world. The thrill, victory in Hebrew is netzach, which means eternity also. Netzach in Hebrew means eternity, means victory. God puts you down this world to win. To win. And when you win, there's no greater feeling. When you win and you identify with that soul and not with the body, you win. There's no greater feeling. And to every positive spiritual feeling, there has to be the opportunity to put it in a place where it doesn't belong. And if that went into sports. Where that's the what do you call it? The reversal. The opposite of what's supposed to be. The side of tumah. Because God didn't create the thrill of victory to beat somebody else, but it was to beat yourself. To beat the negative force inside yourself. To beat the body. To make your own records. And that's the greatest thrill. That's the greatest thrill. That's a great pleasure. It's been contaminated and put in a place where it doesn't belong, where if you're a Detroit Red Wings fan tonight, you may feel the greatest pleasure in the world if you walk off with the Stanley Cup tonight. But that's so worthless. Because all it is, it's a cup. That, you know, is only good till next year when a new team takes it over. And it's just a faded memory that doesn't really do anything for you. All right? So that's important. So we're saying that the wicked, now when we talk about wicked over here, back in the text, wicked, you know, that's the furthest extreme on the continuum. But the rabbis say, Al ze amr chazal, our rabbis say, Rishoim the wicked, afilu b'chayehem kruyim meisim. Even in their lives, they're called dead, because the wicked is totally connected to the body. Ki arei ko adam, b'shosh she'em bo neshama, because any person at the time when he doesn't identify with his soul, rak guf, just the body, hu nikra meis. He's dead, because a body, any body without a soul is dead. If a person, when the time that he's alive, ain lo zihu im neshama shu, doesn't have identification with his soul, he's like a person without a soul. Meis kapasha, simple, like a dead person. Now what he means is, you know, would you say a cow is dead? From a human perspective, it's dead. Would you say a cow has human life? He doesn't have, so he's dead to human life. So a human being that's walking around eating and enjoying the physical parts of life, he's having a wonderful cow life. But he doesn't have a living life. He doesn't have a human life. I would think anybody who thinks that a person, let's say you hypnotize the person to think he's a cow. He mamish thinks he's a cow. So all day long he goes, moo. He starts going over to grass. He starts eating grass. Would you say he's alive? In the truest sense, is he living life? No. So what if he was a smart cow? A smart cow who knows to eat with a fork. And he has fancy food that people eat. And he puts on clothes. But he still does the same thing a cow does. He just runs after physical gratification. but it's more sophisticated. He's not anymore alive. He's not living life anymore. So the person who's not identifying with the soul, he's just living the body. So again, that's the choice. That's what means they're not considered alive. So say, well, I'll wait till I'll die, then I'll worry with it. But right now you're dead. Okay? This is a hard language here. It's the language of the rabbis over here. Even if the rabbis wouldn't have said this, you don't even have the Talmud tell you this. We'd understand this. Why? He's dead because he has no inner life. He is what we would call the living dead. Even if he claims to have the most fulfilling life, he translates fulfilling in the most pleasurable life. More physical pleasure than the next guy. So he's an advanced cow. You know, cow one, cow two, you know, pre-med cow, right? But that's all it is. That's all it is, right? So it's interesting. They tell a story of Yerucham Lavovitz, great mashgiach in the Mir Yeshiva in Europe. One day in class, he asked his students to tell them what he saw, what they saw out in the street. Take a look. Give a kick. Look out in the street. What do you see? So the boy says, I see Yankel of the tailor, Moishel of the smith, you know, Chaimel the butcher. So Reb Yochum says, you don't know what you're seeing. He says, you know what I see? A living cemetery. A living graveyard. It's a graveyard of lost potentials. That Yankel could have been a great Torah scholar. Could have been a person who was connected to much more important things in life. Not that we have anything against a tailor, but he had the potential of being a scholar, and he was happy just to be a tailor who just lives out his life. I saw this guy, he could have been a rabbi, this guy could have been a charitable philanthropist, right? And it's very interesting. So I want to read you a piece from the Pius Etzner Rebbe. Oh, I just love his stuff. And it's better in Hebrew, but he has it in English. It's really a very short. He wrote a book on essays of life to heal the soul. You can't get this book anymore in English. You can't get it. Maybe go online and spend $150 to get a copy of it. What? Savizerus. To heal the soul. They translate in English. So he has some long and some short essays. Here's a very short essay. But you'll hear it's the idea that he's talking about. He was writing his own personal diary, and it was found miraculously after the Holocaust in the Warsaw Ghetto in a garbage can. He wrote a whole moving, if anybody will find this, like one of those whole moving kind. It's unbelievable that God brought out. And it's very rare that tzaddikim can write their own feelings. So in essay 25, he writes, when meaning in life is lost. So just a few lines. He says, don't mourn only for those who kill themselves. This was written between 1926 and 1928, many Jews were losing their livelihoods right around the Depression, and they were committing suicide. Orthodox Jews were committing suicide. You know, we have no idea how the poverty in Europe. You know, we think people today who are poor, it's like, it was momish, it was terrible there. So he's writing about the fact that people are committing suicide. And people were mourning for them. He said, don't mourn only for those who kill themselves. Mourn even more for those who kill their lives. Wouldn't you say a guy watching a box, a puck going back and forth for 3 hours is killing his life? No, I'm having a good time! You're killing your life. What are you doing? You know, it's just you know, you're spending your whole day trying to look beautiful? That's all you're doing? Oh, to look beautiful? You're killing your life. He says, you're more of those who kill their lives. Because these are people who are still killing it every day. The one guy who committed suicide, okay, he did it once, finished, goodbye. Okay, he did a silly thing. But here, people doing the silly thing every day, their whole life. What today are we going to do? How am I going to kill my life today? Yesterday I was watching a hockey game. Today, I'll watch a couple movies. Tomorrow I'll just eat a bunch of food. Right? You're killing your life. You should mourn for these people. People are bemoaning the cheapness of life and those who have committed suicide. I, though, worry even more for the living. He has not killed himself, nevertheless, he's dead. Life has become so meaningless to him that living and dying are the same. Until now, for a Jew to flaunt God's law, he'd first have to renounce his faith in ultimate judgment. He said, in the beginning, if he didn't want to keep Torah mitzvahs, he said, I don't believe in Judaism anymore. He says, but now I see believing Jews, they believe in God, who still are living wanton lives. It's only because their self-esteem is so eroded and destroyed that life, death, heaven and hell have all become meaningless. Who's it all for anyway? For a self that seems too worthless and insignificant to make any effort. Apathy. Apathy for everything, even for one's very being. And that comes from a person who identifies with his body. So let's continue inside. So he says, Kishnisbon and Sivavenu Nira, when we look around us, we see Shaolam Kula Rodof Achrei Tanugas Achomer. Everybody's running after physical pleasures. Everybody has a different type of pleasure that they are more drawn to. But more than that, not only does it draw him, it imprisons him. People get imprisoned to those pleasures. Mi b'chol, this one with this one. Aval machane mishutav kimat b'chol. What's the common denominator in all these pleasures? Almost. Shehaolam hachomer shova osam, that the physical world has him imprisoned. Hem nimtzoyim bebeis hasor shal redifa achrei hachomer. They are found in a jail running after the physical world. So, the ones, jails, things, the guy who needs to have the pizza, the guy who needs to watch a sporting event, he can't live without it. Right? The ones who don't need the pizza, and who don't need the hockey game, and who don't need the beer, those are the free people. Right? If you could look at a cake and walk right past it, no matter how much it says, psst, psst, come on, good looking, come here. Let's have a good time. That frosting cake, ugh, it's so amazing. Who's free? The people, the Orthodox Jews, or the sect Jews who run to the Viennese table at 11:30 after they've had five courses already? You call that a human being who's alive? Or the guy said, Genigschein, I had enough. It was a good steak dinner. It was a nice entree. And I'm not hungry. And I can leave. Who's alive and who's dead? That's what he's saying over here. A person who runs after the physical and identifies with the physical, his life is a life of death. On the you go outside, we see people. Everybody's looking for something. We had a bunch of singles over last week. It was a big single Shabbaton, very successful single Shabbaton. About 70 singles came here on Friday. So they came to houses before, about 10 at a shot. So we had 10 in my house. So they're telling you about their lives. Like, my mom had such a sheltered life. I'm such a nebuch. After high school, I went to yeshiva. Like, I'm a real loser. What did I do after high school? I spent 6 months working in a factory to make a couple dollars. And then I went right to yeshiva for 10 years. Like, what a sheltered, terrible life I had. While there were other guys, they had to see the world. There's a whole big wide world. Without the sports, to see. This guy said, I'm a nice guy. I toured the world for 3 years. So I said, I didn't say that. I was like, what were you doing for the 3 years? Like, what were you doing? I was seeing things. And then what? And then I went to Israel for 4 years. And then I decided to come home and maybe, make a living. So what were you doing? In other words, he's looking for something. He's looking for something, but he hasn't found it. He's not married. He can't be that happy. Right? But they have to put on an aura that they're happy, because otherwise they'd be a bunch of losers. But the Talmud says, a man without a wife is a man without a life. If you're not married, the Talmud says, you're not happy. You're not alive. It's a Rachmanis. I feel bad. Like, I wish to say, listen here, just take this girl and get married, you'd be happy. But he doesn't know how. He doesn't even know how. He wouldn't even know. I had a whole discussion with him. He said, I'm looking for love. One of them said, looking for love. I said, do you even know what it is? Oh, sure. I said, how do you know what love is? I know. I said, how do you know? I know. I said, did you get any dictionary? Gave you a definition? You found it by watching Days of Our Lives or The Young and the Restless? That's how you found out what it means? By people who are trying to sell, you know, a laundry detergent or worse? And from that, you're going to understand what love means? I've been in love. I said, you don't even know what the word means. Because he only knows what a body knows, how an animal, a rational animal loves. He doesn't know what love is. That's why they can't get married. So I'm just saying, so he's looking, he's saying, they're looking. I'm going to find something. I'm looking. But nobody knows exactly what it is. What are you looking for? Margishim rak shemashu chazvut. They feel something's missing. Something's missing. This one thing, concert. If I go to a concert, that will fill in what's missing. And the second one thinks that if he takes a trip somewhere, oh, go around the world for 3 years, I'll find what I'm missing. But after they come back, even in a good situation, and maybe for the time, I'm not reading anymore now, and for the time, it was okay for a moment, and maybe for a day or 2 days, and maybe, he's talking to Israelis, maybe a trip to America for a week is good. But Akhra, he said, but after the fun is over, Mashu Besocha Dayin Yavesh, there's still something inside of him that's dry. Mashu Besocha Chaser, something is missing. In other words, he was only filling the body. The body, you know, doesn't stay, doesn't have staying power. As King Solomon said, "Vahanefesh lo tamale," the soul never can be filled with physical pleasures, and that's what's really bothering him. So the question is: so you walk, all these people walk around. There's something missing in my life. If I only had this. So machas shem b'soch tocha. What's he really missing inside? What's he missing inside? Lo mashu chaser. Not something is missing. El hakol chaser. Everything's missing. It's not that something's missing, everything's missing. He's got nothing. Why? Because the Adam who neshamim levish beguf. Because a person is supposed to be a body with a soul with a body as clothing. That's what you're supposed to be. And if you're filling up the neshama with the things the neshama wants, you're a happy person. But ukishu mazes asas aguf makupa. When you identify with the body, then chasakol, you're missing the whole game. And you see, what are all these people doing? They're trying to do another body activity, but it has a law of diminishing returns. There's only so much physical. They come to the point where you've done it all, been there, done it. There's nothing more anymore. You want to have a relationship, i.e. relationship means, for a man, sex. You know, for a woman, it's companionship. It's all just sophisticated forms of physical pleasures. Still nothing spiritual. Okay? Just sophisticated forms, right? The woman's a little more sophisticated than the guy. Right? Okay. So the guy has sex with 50 million women. I mean, you know, a lady's a lady. After you had, you know, the variety's gone. You know, okay, then you start working on men and cows and frogs and other things. That's where eroticism comes from, because normal is boring. Normal is boring. And a woman, how many friends can she have already? So she has 20, 30 friends. After a while, it's enough with the friends. Right? And then what happens? It's nothing there. So what's missing? Everything's missing. You don't identify with the thing that can satisfy you. Right? What if a guy is coming to the end of the month, he only has 80% of his salary? For whatever reason, 20% got garnished. He can still make it. I mean, he's missing 20%. Okay, he can somehow pull it off. But he doesn't have a penny. He's lost. He's totally lost. There was a niggin from many, many years ago in our youth, for some of our youth, some of before your youth. There's a line that went, I'm empty and aching. Can you finish it off? Okay. And I don't know why. Right? You don't, never heard that one? Well, not one of their bigger ones? I'd rather be a hammer than a nail. Okay, anyway. I'm empty and aching and I don't know why. That's exactly, so that, and the Imam's Jewish boys who went off the path. The most famous duo in the 60s. Right? So, Yeah, but I don't want to say it on the tape. I don't want to give them so much, you know, I don't want to, you know, damage the tape, right? But you hear the words, I'm empty and aching, and I don't know why. I don't know why. You don't know why because you've got nothing in your life, right? Hametziya shel ha'adam hamezuha im ha'chomer, the reality of a person who identifies with the physical, he mezuha shel ha'adam meis. It's the reality of a dead person. Kamo adam shenimtza b'nahar v'umay b'lo, the guy's in the river and he's drowning. He thinks in the last moments of my life. He's trying his best to live, but he just swallows up more water. So he tries to get into newer pleasures and more pleasures. So what we set up to this point is that this idea of identifying between body and soul, it's not just a question of, oh, I'm going to have a very scary post-death experience that I'm not used to being a soul and the thing I identify with is gone. He's saying you're not alive even now, but God, in order to make a free will choice, what does he do? He disguises the death. Because if you really felt you were dead, you wouldn't do these silly things, right? So that's what we talk about, the thrill of victory. So you can take the thrill of victory from the holy realm and you can put it in the not holy realm. And just watch hockey games all day long and get thrilled to death. Literally. Right? So God has a talent to make those things that are dead make you think you're alive. But at the end of the day, you end up with that same empty feeling. You're aching and empty and you don't know why. You can't be satisfied. Okay, the game's over. You should be happy. You had enough. No. You know, the pleasure of eating food, it only lasts for the few seconds it goes down your throat. And then it's over. It's finished. Goodbye. There's nothing to keep going. It's a different type of pleasure. Okay, any questions? Yes, ma'am. You're going to get the question award. That's okay.
So even the piece that you're reading from the rabbi, found in the garbage can, that was quite a long time ago. And it seems that from generation to generation, there's always been spiritual apathy of sorts. It just takes on, it transforms, you know, in terms of its challenges or how it manifests.
Yes. Why are we always chasing the wrong thing?
Yeah.
Very simple. We don't follow God's instructions.
But like from the very beginning of existence, it seems so.
Yeah, because God gives us a very good, strong yetzer hara, an evil inclination. He does his job very well. God gives us instructions how to not be seduced by the yetzer hara, and we don't follow our instructions very well. It's free will choice. Free will choice. God can't force you to make the right choice. He can just give you the options. And, you know, the Yetzer is very seductive and will create all kinds of visions and images in your mind to think this is amazing, to fool you. And we are very susceptible beings. It's not rocket science here, you know. We think we're smarter than God. That's the problem. Why are there not more people in this class? There should be thousands of people in this class. Why? Because they're all busy doing much more important things in life. Right? That's the Torah says it. If you read the Torah, it's pretty clear. The Torah says that, you know, you have a challenge and you have to keep your head with you. And people don't. People don't. Okay, let's go to the next subsection. Olam b'matzav gesisa. The world is in a situation called a goses. A goses is a Talmudic terminology for a person on his deathbed. And there's all kinds of special laws that apply to a person on his deathbed. So he says, matzav dorenu, harod of kulo achrachem. We're on the next page now, page 7. The situation of our generation that runs totally after the physical. He's like a person that's called a goses, a deathbed person. What does that mean? In other words, just like the person on his last breath. He's like almost all dead. It's just a little bit of life. So saying all the living people today, they got very little life in themselves. Walking stiffs. Physicality running after physicality. More and more physicality with no end and no boundaries. There are advertisements, there are newspapers, and a person follows after all these kinds of things. He works in order to buy. He buys in order to eat. He runs and pursues the physicality. This situation, matzav kazeh, is a situation of death. Right? Person works to come home to eat. What happens? You overeat. You get sick. You have to go to the doctor. The doctor has doctor bills. You need to work harder to pay for the doctor bills. Then you feel worse because you're working harder. You have to have a bigger vacation to recover from the work. And the bigger vacation costs more money. So you're going to have to work harder before you go on the vacation. And the cycle continues. Like, think about it. Think about people's pathetic lives. What do you do from morning to night? You get up in order to work. Why do you work? To make the money. You make the money to buy the food. You buy the food to have the strength to go back to work. So what's your life? You're a slave. You're doing nothing. Oh no, I get the weekends off. And what do you do then? I just sit at my cottage and do nothing. So we could put you in a coffin and do nothing also. You know, we'll pipe in music into the coffin, birds tweeting. So like they're really doing nothing. And that really is, that's like, it's just like a deathbed experience. He says, in this situation, you know what we need? You know what we need? It's our generation. It's a bunch of walking stiffs. So what do we need? We need a concept in Judaism called Tchiyat HaMeisim, resurrection of the dead. We need to resurrect all the Jews. They're dead. And he's saying this is not an analogy, it's not an allegory. It is the reality. As the Kutzker Rebbe, the holy Kutzker Rebbe said, Hashem, you know I could bring dead people back to life. He could. He knew the mystical formulas to bring dead people back to life. But he said, I'd rather bring the living back to life. Through his teachings and through his Torah. That's what he would rather do. Right. So now let's talk about this. Got about 5 minutes. So what is Tchiyas HaMeisim? What is resurrection of the dead? Well, what will happen is, before the Mashiach comes, when the Mashiach comes, your soul that's back in heaven is going to come back down and be reunited with the body. The body will come out of the ground and miraculously will have a new, great, impressive, better model than ever, right? And the soul will come back to the body. Okay, so what happens? When a person died, the soul went out of the body, and when the resurrection happens, the soul comes back into the body. So the question is, so what happened different when you were alive or when you got resurrected? In other words, right now we're alive. You got a soul in your body? Yeah. Okay, we're all going to die. Fine. We're all going to die. Then what happens? The soul leaves the body. Then what happens? The soul comes back in the body. So what did we get? So he answers, this is what you get. Before you die, most people are identifying with the body. And the soul just happens to be in there. And since you don't really identify with the soul in a clear way, that soul has to leave. It's not really its place. He compares it to a person who rents an apartment. What happens when you rent an apartment? When the lease is up, out you go. The soul is renting the apartment. The apartment is the body. That's the address. The address is, this body is my soul's apartment. And of course, we throw the soul a few bones here and there, you know, go to services once a week and go to a class once a week, throw it a couple bones. But really, it's just a visitor in the apartment. Okay? And when the soul is in the body, he feels that it's not his place. He feels like it's a rental unit. But who's the balabos? Who's the owner of the house? The owner of the house is the landlord. Who's the landlord? The body. And if the landlord says, sleep, then you sleep. If the landlord says eat, then you eat. If the landlord says scream at your kids, you scream at your kids. And the soul is just occupying some space. And it's time to leave, out you go. But if a person identifies with his soul, it's reversed. Then the soul is the landlord. It's his place. He's in his place. Why should I leave? I'm the landlord. Right? And when I have to leave, I'll change my clothes. I'll change my clothes from one body to a different spiritual type of reality. But when the soul is the boss, the soul is the landlord, it decides how much to sleep. It decides how much to eat. It decides where your eyes should be looking. It decides when and if you should scream. Because the body is only renting from the soul. And the soul is making the decisions. That's the difference. So now we understand, for most people when they're alive, the body and the soul are together, the body is the landlord, and the soul is the renter. And since it's the renter, you know, it doesn't like to make too many problems. You don't want to get the landlord too upset. He might throw you out. So you have to follow the rules. But when the resurrection of the dead happens, this is the unbelievable change, is that when you reunite, the soul is the boss. That's going to be the beautiful thing of the resurrection. When that happens, the ultimate perfection happens, the soul will be the boss, and the body's going to take all the direction of the soul, because we'll all identify with the soul. And that's the difference of what resurrection does. It will be total identification. The world will be filled with knowledge, and everyone's thinking, I'd have been an idiot to think that my body was the boss. So that's what the tzaddik says. Now is the time that we are in this situation where we feel everything so physical. So he says what he is saying basically is, if you will take my course, he is saying, I promise you a tchias hamesim, I promise I'll resurrect your soul now while you're alive. Why wait for the resurrection, where the only difference is that the soul will be the boss and the soul will make the decisions because you're identifying with it? He says you don't have to wait till the resurrection, you can accomplish this now. Right? And that's why, if you want to improve as a human being, don't focus on these little details. Imagine a person's dead. Imagine you go to a person, oh, Yanko, you're looking a little pale lately. Did you ever think of jogging? You know, like talking to a dead person, right? It's not going to help. You know, maybe you should get divorced. Maybe you'll feel better. No, but the guy's dead. What he needs is to be revived. So what we're talking about here, it's not, that's why we're not talking about, okay, we're going to take another class in Talmud, we'll take a class in Kashrus, we'll take a class in anger management. That's just details that you're giving a dead person. That's not going to help. We've got to revive the dead. And how do you revive the dead? By having the person, what is the revival of the dead? When the person identifies with the soul. So that's what the job in this course is, to identify with the soul. This is all still not Ruth yet where you want to be at, because you want to know how to do it. But again, it's so important to be convinced how important this activity is. All right? So next week, we'll continue with a little bit more introduction. I'm sorry. I'll try to go through it quicker, but I felt it was critical to make it clear some ideas. And we will get to the real brass tacks ideas. God willing, we'll start that even next week. You have a wonderful day, night, whatever. Those who want to daven Mariv, that's taking place right now in the room next door. Mincha. Yeah, that's even better.